are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay originally aired on January 8th, 1988.
In the last few days, all the conversation has been about the weather. Everything from tales of great feats of survival to horror stories of situations where people didn't make out so well. It always reminds me of the days when I had a job that required me to be out in all kinds of weather. I made out okay, but what always amazed me was how much better the men who worked for me adjusted to the cold. I had a crew of men who hailed from the Eltmar-Williamstown area. They seemed to have spent all of their life out of doors, and they possessed an admirable ability to produce when others might have declared that it wasn't fit for man or beast out there. I was talking to some people about that very subject not too long ago, and their response was, "You must have been an awful slave driver." Actually, it wasn't that at all. In fact, I had a pretty loose tether on those guys. We had a sort of gentleman's agreement. I lined out the jobs and made sure that such necessities as paychecks and basic equipment were in order, and they'd do the work, mostly pretty well. I knew well enough that some of them had less than spotless reputations, but I also knew that they had the kind of work ethic that would amaze most people today. They always more than earned the meager dollars I was able to provide from the state coffers. But it's not that admirable or honorable attribute that brings them to mind now. It was their ability to survive with apparent comfort in really rough weather and still run surveys, fence woodlots, and do wildlife improvement work, even during those days when coon and possum thought better of venturing forth, and when the partridge would still be found abed in his snowdrift retreat well into the morning. Those guys knew the limitations of their clothes, equipment, and most of all their bodies. If they said the weather was too rough to be out of doors, I accepted it, and they spent their time indoors sharpening and honing tools, refurbishing equipment, or doing other necessary maintenance. That's more or less the way it is in nature, too. If it is going to survive, wildlife has to know its limitations, when to be abroad and when to stay put, and, of course, where to find the proper shelter. It's sometimes, I suspect, a rather exquisitely balanced survival game that chickadee, deer, mouse, or shrew play with the forces of nature, with little room for miscalculation. There are limits to how long any of those creatures can remain holed up before the need for food demands that they brave the elements. Occasionally, I've found the remains of those who apparently made a mistake, either venturing forth imprudently or staying holed up just a bit too long. There was a time when my curiosity wouldn't let me remain in doubt about the causes of such deaths. I was out in the countryside as soon as possible after every blizzard, searching in nest boxes, hollow logs, and trees, and in fence corners, in search of the casualties. And there wasn't one that didn't get an autopsy by me or by someone more expert. Very seldom was the apparent cause of death starvation. Age, extremely poor physical condition that would require more than a few days to develop, most often injury or respiratory diseases, seem to explain the mortality. You'd expect it to be that way, wouldn't you? After all, most of these creatures have a much longer history of survival hereabouts than we do. Many of them sport some genetically controlled wintering equipment, such as insulated underwear. Both mammals and birds have this. Snow boots, mittens, and earmuffs, fur or feathered protected extremities. Even in some cases, snowshoes. Put that last in quotes, and realize we're talking here of excessively furred or feathered feet, or in the case of the rough grouse, horny extensions on the lateral surfaces of the toes. In addition, the ptarmigan, a northern grouse, several other birds, and a variety of mammals, fairing hare, weasels, arctic fox, and wolf, change their coats annually from dark colors to lighter colors, including white. These physical attributes don't by themselves explain survival in extreme cold. It's still habit, what you might call a proper wintering strategy that allows a creature to make it. If his winter strategy, including proper feeding, proper shelter, general good condition, meets the needs, survival is pretty certain despite the weather. However, we shouldn't overlook the fact that there is a certain therapy for the species in winter mortality. It is as much as anything a culling process that refines and improves the health of the total community. Those people whose eyes are blinded by their emotions tend not to want to hear about that, but it is a part of the natural mechanism working the way it was designed to. Every creature tries to survive. That's instinct. But not all can survive and still maintain proper energy balances. That's a part of the wintering strategy that transcends the earthly and mundane. Those who understand and even admire it are all too few. Well, that's all I have for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.